Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that explores the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Greta Anderson, together with Ursula Rudenberg. And last weekend, it was KHOI making the news in Central Iowa with its hosting of the Grassroots Radio Conference, a nationwide gathering of people involved in community radio in their locales. In this show, we'll be highlighting different cultural events and discoveries that came out of that conference, and also at the end of the show, sharing an interview with Lynn Carey, director of the Ames Public Library, whose tribe of employees and volunteers also marked a momentous occasion on Sunday. The stars seem to have been very well aligned for Douglas Avenue downtown this weekend, Ursula.
That's right, Greta. It was quite remarkable. We had Douglas Avenue closed down first on Thursday evening for the opening potluck meal, and then on Friday evening for the foodies and brew event, and then on Saturday, an impromptu party got going outside the station here on Douglas as DJs from across the country combined their talents in our studio and on the air. And then on Sunday, an event none of us knew about, the Body of Christ held a cookout on our block. And then the Ames Public Library staged a book brigade, passing 14 books by a human chain from the temporary site in the Hy-Vee Mall back to the permanent home here on Douglas Avenue. So it was truly the cultural corridor this weekend.
On the show today, we'll be exploring in particular the hip-hop summit that you mentioned. It was held at the conference and I understand was a first ever for Grassroots Radio.
Mm-hmm.
But Ursula, can you tell me how many people from elsewhere, not from Ames, came to attend this conference?
Well, we haven't done a total tally yet, but I think it's about 120.
And talk about the presenters. How many were here?
We had about, I would say, about 40 presenters. And the presenters at the conference are also attendees. It's the nature of the conference that people do both. We were really pleased to line up some really fabulous presenters, many of whom are station broadcasts, including Peter Beauchamp from All Mixed Up, Barry Vogel of Radio Curious, and, of course, our keynote speaker, David Barsamian, who is host of Alternative Radio.
I've prepared a clip of David's presentation, which really showcases his sense of humor as he's reviewing a local exhibit on the Vietnam War down in Des Moines. But Ursula, you introduced David at the conference. Would you like to do so for our listeners?
Okay, great. David is the host of Alternative Radio. He resides in Boulder, Colorado, and he has really altered the media landscape with his radio programs and books that he's written together with people like Noam Chomsky, Tariq Ali, Howard Zinn, Edward Said, Arundhati Roy, and many others. He's the winner of the Media Education Award, the ACLU's Upton Sinclair Award for Independent Journalism, and the Cultural Freedom Fellowship from the Lannan Foundation. And the Institute for Alternative Journalism named him one of its top 10 media heroes.
Okay, so he's got a lot of brass on him.
He does.
And it was nice because he provided a kind of national and international news outlook for us while we came together with all of our local concerns and the news stories that we're doing locally. So here's a piece from his keynote talk Friday morning.
Well, good morning, Grassroots Conference attendees in Ames, Iowa. It's great to see all your smiling faces and a lot of new faces, and I'm so glad to be here. I really feel this is part of, you know, the community that Alternative Radio is connected with, and I think, you know, the kind of work that you're doing is absolutely critical to the communication needs of a democratic society. And the efforts that you make do count. Now, talking about, I mean, the corporate media really is like, it's almost unfair. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, there's such an easy target. And one has to wonder why more people aren't engaged, you know, in this activity outside of our immediate circles. The media, that is to say a handful of corporate conglomerates, defend the class interests of the owners and the domestic policies and foreign policy prerogatives of the state. In a monochromatic one-note samba, they replicate the tropes of benevolence and altruism of U.S. foreign policy and promote the idea of America's indispensable role in the world. The word imperialism cannot be mentioned. They are essentially, you know, well-trained in the arts of stenography, in taking notes, lapdogs with laptops, you know, they compete for the best hair on the air, and they're kind of practicing a form of prestitution. This is a new vice that has been developed in 20th century and 21st century America. You know, one of our great contributions to world culture and to journalism. Now, of course, you know, occasionally mistakes are made. Sometimes they're even elevated to the term tragedy, like Vietnam. Any discussion about Vietnam has often the word tragedy and mistake attached to it. I was at the Iowa State Capitol yesterday in Des Moines, and there is an exhibit there of celebrating or marking the 50th anniversary of the beginning of the Vietnam War. In fact, the Gulf of Tonkin, which was used by the peace candidate Lyndon B. Johnson in 1964 as justification for a massive invasion of Indochina, that anniversary was just a couple of days ago in early August. And I remember at the time, I don't want to give away my age, I was about 20, and I was driving cross country and I heard on the radio that U.S. destroyers had been attacked on the open seas in the South China Sea off the coast of Vietnam. And, you know, immediately, I wasn't a media maven then, but I'm saying, wait a second. U.S. warfare class destroyers are attacked on the open seas by what? I knew a little bit about the Vietnamese Navy. Canoes, kayaks, yachts. You know, what were these boats, and why would they risk something like that? It didn't make any sense at all. But right away, almost in lockstep, you know, the Congress, with two notable exceptions, Wayne Morse of the great state of Oregon and Ernest Gruening of the great state of Alaska, they were the only ones that say, hey, there's something fishy with this story. It just doesn't make sense. Why would Vietnam provoke, you know, the greatest military on the face of the earth and with the most powerful Navy and Air Force? And of course, as they say, the rest is history. So in this exhibit, which you can see at the state capitol, there's a picture of Indochina, and Vietnam is highlighted. What is not highlighted are the two adjoining countries, Laos and Cambodia, which I found very interesting. Both were subjected to the greatest bombing campaigns in the history of the world. Massive numbers of people, untold numbers of people were killed, yet there was no mention of Laos and Cambodia. So it's the Vietnam. Again, it was a conflict. You know, one really has to marvel at the credulity and of the corporate media in accepting at face value, you know, all of these lies, and then, to their discredit, repeating them, replicating them.
That was David Barsamian speaking at the Grassroots Radio Conference, which KHOI hosted this weekend. This is Local Talk, and I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and I'm here with Ursula Rudenberg. I guess you could call her the co-host of the show, but truly, as the woman who brought us the GRC, she is our very honored and special guest, as well as being station manager. Here is KHOI board member Elliot describing to our guests at the conference what happened that fateful Tuesday afternoon.
Just throw this in there quick. Ursula thanked the whole KHOI staff, but I want to thank her for putting this together. I don't remember how long ago it was, but she threw this out there at a board meeting, and everyone was silent for 5-10 seconds. And I think we all just went, sure. I mean, might as well try it, and no one knew what it was going to entail. But yeah, so thanks for all the work that you've done. It's amazing.
Can you say a few words, Ursula, about what this conference meant to you?
Well, it meant a lot of things. But I think at the essence, this conference was, for me, the experience of bringing the community that I really live in my head, into physical reality here in my hometown and in the place where I live. And I think most of us that have been in community radio for a while, we all do that. We go through our daily life and we meet whatever challenges we have in our work happily, really, because we have this community that we hold in our hearts all the time. And we feel that we're building this community, you know, on a daily basis. And it's really an international community of people who do community radio and hold the vision for this kind of democratic activity that's based in communication. And most of us have known each other for maybe, you know, more than 10 years by now, and know that we're doing this work everywhere in the country and in other countries. And you kind of hold these people in your hearts, and you know they're walking with you somewhere on the planet. But it's just a very, very special treat when people physically, you know, manifest in your area and bring that energy in such a focused way to your community. And it was really just filling the station, our town, our neighborhood with those people and the kind of intelligence and commitment and you know, level of citizen participation that's just so much fun to be around.
Did you have a favorite moment from the conference?
Well, you know, I think in all honesty, my favorite moment was last night. One of the people that was presenting at the conference was my personal mentor, who's a psychologist who gives me a lot of training in how to deal with organizational issues, how to build an organization. And a bunch of people at the conference hadn't heard his presentation, and so they asked to see it last night here at the station. And we sat together until almost midnight looking at two slideshows about the kind of psychological makeup of how to run an organization effectively, and just had endless discussion about the ins and outs and the nuances of working together. And it was just so much fun. And I also have to say, on Saturday night, we did organize the Hip Hop Summit, which brought a lot of young people and people of color to the station. And they came from all over the country. And on Saturday night, they took to the air for about 4 or 5 hours. And KHOI went online this week. And so they, you know, went on Facebook and announced.
We're streaming live, in other
words. We're streaming live now. So they were able to go on Facebook and let folks all over the country know that the Hip Hop Summit was in Ames, Iowa, was on the air. And so all these people piled online and started listening to them online and talking to them through Facebook. And it was just really great to see that in the station. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to be exploring that a little bit more in this show. And at a gathering like this, everyone has a very different experience. It's safe to say the only regret attendees have is not being able to be more than one place at
Absolutely.
Once. Absolutely. And one of the byroads of my experience this past weekend was forming a friendship with an Iowan who was very fluent in the oral tradition of poetry, the Bardic tradition. And he was saying that this conference, which is actually 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, was like a 4-day ceremony engaging the heart, the mind, the body, and the spirit.
Yeah. And, you know, that's really the thing that I love most about this conference, is that it's just as open-hearted spirit of friendship and sharing, and the body was part of it. And in fact, we made food at first over at the First United Methodist Church, our dining hall area. And Greta, you went out and picked wildflowers to decorate it, and it was very beautiful. And it was just really great, because the people that come to these conferences, they're community workers themselves. And they just loved eating at Food at First, because they really felt connected to a community organization. And, you know, the other thing I loved about the conference is just how over and over again I heard folks at the conference say that they really experienced Iowa hospitality. And people in our town really did help them a lot, anywhere from the people that took them into their homes to the businesses downtown and, you know, the institutions like Main Street Cultural District. So people really, really loved Iowa.
Right. That came out in the closing plenary on Sunday, where folks had the opportunity, we passed the mic, and just they could express themselves. Two stories, dominated, it seemed, the comments and the conference in general, and that was that hip-hop summit, which on Friday they performed live, and then on Saturday they got on the air and performed again. So there was that, and then the low-power FM movement, which we've talked about on this show before, but briefly, a window opened up for low-power FM stations to be created a couple years ago, and that led to the formation of just scads of these low-power FM stations, community radio stations. So here's a montage of just a few of those voices at that final gathering. It starts with the passing on of the symbolic GRC quilt to a low-power station. Would you like to explain the GRC quilt?
Well, the mother of one of the folks that used to work at a station in Santa Barbara put out a call one year for T-shirts from stations that attend this conference. And then she put those T-shirts, made a quilt out of the T-shirts. And the quilt now gets passed from conference to conference each year. There's basically a raffle for it. And the money is then used to pay for scholarship to get people to the conference. And then the station that wins the raffle gets to keep the quilts hanging in their station for the year until the next conference.
It's sweet. And the gentleman who won it was just so pumped.
Yeah, he really put out the intention to get that quilt. He bought three tickets, and he focused on – and when I put my hand in the raffle thing, my hand went right to his ticket. He had really put out that intention.
We don't have call letters yet, but we have a CP. We're out of Fort Hood, Texas, just about an hour north of Austin. And this, we do have a space, though. We have a space. We operate a cafe and outreach center there. And not only are we going to have it there, we're going to have it at every event that any of these stations here in Texas, San Marcos, Wimberley, we're going to have it at every event that anybody in Texas is doing, okay? Thank you.
This is Michi Bradley. Okay, I am just overly impressed with the number of LPFMers who showed up at this thing. Your strength is in numbers here. And I know a lot of you are still MX. You're still waiting for construction permits. I'm involved in a very big battle in Los Angeles right now. And, you know, I can't wait till we do this again next year, so that way those who are on the air already can teach those who are still not on the air yet a few things that they've experienced since being on the air as an LPFM station. We are a very strong and very diverse group here. And I love you all, and I can't wait to see you all next year.
As a member of the Hip Hop Summit, I got a lot more than I bargained for at this conference. You know, I expected I was going to come and do my thing, and then I'd come to some breakout sessions, just like any community media conference or conference in general. And what's been really interesting is, you know, I haven't actually been able to make it to a ton of the conference sessions because of, like, you know, I found myself lots of times with people that just are like, oh, you're Jerome, right? Hey, let's talk for a minute. I want to talk to you about hip-hop at my station. How can I do outreach through hip-hop music? How can we bring that to our community? Because, you know, like some of the examples I've shown, I live in a rural community, like in a county of only 100,000 people. And I do a hip-hop show. I mean, if you drove through with all the cows and the chickens and the, like, for real. I know about the country. Don't get me on the farm, y'all. I know what's up. Like, it's just the outpouring of open-mindedness from people here that it's touched my heart, because the reason why I traveled all the way from the Seattle area was in the hopes that we could help break those barriers in community radio when it comes to hip hop as a movement and outreach. And so I not only did I want to share that stream of thought, that how humbling it's been to have so many people respect what you do, I just want to say thank you. I really do. I really want to say thank you. Thank you.
Well, I want to follow up Jerome by talking about, he and I sat and talked for like an hour last night, and I learned so much about hip hop. I learned that these are guys talking about their experiences. They're talking about their experiences and getting their truth out to the rest of the folks. And I really can appreciate that, and thank you, Jerome.
Well, I'm going to keep on the hip hop thread, and I want to thank everybody that came to the show the other night and got to witness hip hop in its live form, because you know that the original format of hip hop is to be all performed live, and it was sort of a departure when it started to be recorded. So it's supposed to be a communal thing that brings people together. So you know, I want to thank everybody that just came up and said that we kind of changed perhaps some of your perception about hip hop and rap music. So I want to suggest that, you know, it's not just a movement that we're doing, but also just the way of life for a bunch of youth. And, you don't have to be geographically from one place or another to adopt it as your culture. And the approach that we take to the culture is something that can really give legs to each and every community radio station out there. I think of the community radio in general as being a reflection of hip hop, because the emphasis of both is to present underrepresented viewpoints and or actively suppressed, and also to reflect the diversity. You know, when it comes to hip hop music, we've sampled every genre and type of recorded music under the sun. Well, these are all things that are being played on other shows on the station. But what differentiates us from another musical movement like indie rock or you know, electronic dance music is that it's reflected in all of the aspects of the way that we live our lives. And that is very similar to how people embrace community radio, and we really start to embody what it is that the mission of our organization is. So I just want to encourage everybody out there to, you know, when it comes to the graying of the station or the lack of youth participation, to understand that the youth are going to come in and they're going to say some things that are uncomfortable and not acceptable, and you've got to embrace that. So just, you know, understand that we're just going to be reflecting society. It's not we're not damaging society. We've been damaged by it. So we've got to bring all of that forth. So thanks.
You will start to notice that this afternoon, you're still around, the good people of Ames, Iowa are going to make a line through Main Street and through Douglas here. No, this is not how they usually behave. They're they're moving the books from the old library, the temporary library. They have just finished building the library here. After great pains, we kept our library in town instead of moving it out of town. They've renovated. They just finished. And they're moving the books by hand through a human chain from one place to another. So that's what they're doing. And you're welcome to join the chain if you want and sneak in whatever book you want into our library.
Okay. Ames is awesome. We all found out. I mean, those of us that didn't know.
My story, just to tell you guys how important GRC has been to us and my colleagues, is that I came to my first GRC in Kansas City, and I came there trying to save a 14,000-watt college station in Nashville, Tennessee, 60-year-old student-run station that was, unfortunately, like many college stations in our country, being taken over by a local NPR affiliate. So We ended up losing our station just actually this year. Thanks to many people in this room, we got a lot of good advice for fighting that sale, and we held it off for like 3 years. But what I really learned at that GRC was about the LPFM window that was coming up. So when we were in danger of losing our frequency, Donna, Otis, Jim Ellinger, bless his heart, wherever he is. So they all let me know about the LPFM window. I organized two groups to apply for an LPFM, one in Nashville, where the former college station was. I really am excited about this LPFM thing. It's so great that so many LPFM people have come out here and are making this happen, and I'm just really looking forward to the future of American radio, and please, can we have the GRC again? Somebody please pick it up. Let's do it. Let's keep this thing rolling. It's just so important to our entire media landscape. So,
and during this planning and getting together and coordinating everything, we had these movie scripts running in our heads. And we had these movies, and we'd watch them play out, and we'd play the scenarios together to the point where we got to a level where we could actually see all the smiling faces and see it all the way to this moment.
Okay, our work is done here.
If anyone has a minute, if anyone wants to help stack chairs, that'd be great.
Okay, that's the official closing words of the GRC.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're talking about the Grassroots Radio Conference of 2014 held in our front yard here on Douglas Avenue and at the Octagon Arts Center, which we certainly need to recognize.
Yes, and Ruth Wiedemeyer, the manager of the Octagon Shop, who's also our treasurer here at KHOI, she worked just nonstop throughout the whole conference, managing the registration and the logistics on the ground floor, as well as allowing conference goers to camp on her land and sleep in her house. So we thank you, Ruth. You were incredible. And thank you for the Octagon. They really gave us the whole building, and it was a great conference center because it was right across the street from us, and we had all these classrooms, and it was just a really great space to have a conference.
And as I climbed the stairs for the umpteenth time yesterday, I did take a glance at your mother's portrait hanging on the wall as one of the four female founders of the institution. Surely your mother was very proud and present, perhaps, with you this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm one of these people that believe that the dead are really here with us most of the time. And I glanced at her a lot as going up and down the stairs and kind of said, what do you think? And at one point I touched the picture with my finger and I just got this hit of energy and I really kind of physically felt for a moment that she was right there. I just stopped for a minute and just had a real private moment with her. It was very, very cool. I wish she was here in person. She was so much fun when she was alive.
Well, we'll get to our ancestors in a bit here as we explore the Meskwaki connection with our conference. But first, let's answer some of the questions our listeners might be having about this hip-hop summit. I spoke with Ron Latson of our very own station who helped bring this event to fruition.
The hip-hop summit was a collection of different DJs, program directors, and people that are with community radio stations that are interested in hip-hop from across the country. The actual summit was at DG's Tap House, and that was from 1:30 to 6 p.m. We had an agenda. We started off talking about what hip-hop meant to us, and we went from there to how can we incorporate hip-hop into community radio stations, and from there we wanted to leave with something that we all felt good about and something that we could take with us and say we accomplished something this weekend. And that was the whole collective of setting up a hip-hop radio network. We finally have an actual community radio hip-hop union to where artists and DJs and people that are connected with hip-hop can now go and either give their information or get their information out there.
And another big part of what you were doing, it seemed, was interfacing with community radio people who might not be that involved in the hip-hop movement and showing us what hip-hop has to offer community radio.
Exactly. And that was another big goal and a big eye-opening experience. We kind of knew going into this summit that hip-hop had a basic stigmatism to it or a negative vibe coming from it. So we wanted to get together amongst ourselves to talk about the negativity and how we can change that whole image. But the thing about it was that the other conference goers that were new to hip-hop started coming up to us and actually questioning us about hip-hop. What is hip-hop? You know, what's the meaning of it? You know, what's the direction that it's going in? We changed a lot of minds with the Hip-Hop Summit. People that were connected in community radio, they found out that, you know, this is something that I might be able to incorporate into my programming schedule. So that's another one of the missions that we accomplished here, is that we left people here either thinking about starting a hip-hop show or wanting to start a hip-hop show. They now have a collective union network that they can get the information about hip-hop, you know, how to start a hip-hop show, how to actually pick a hip-hop DJ. How is that DJ going to get the music that they need? Because right now, getting radio-edited music is really hard because of all the negativity it has and all the words that it has in it that can't be played on the radio. Now they can go to this union and get the information that their DJs will need.
Why do you think they got inspired to reach out in that way?
Because of the positivity that was presented by the attendees here at the summit. We're all positive. I mean, this is what we do. We live, we eat, we drink, we are hip-hop. And they kind of got that feeling about hip-hop that is not as negative as it seems. And the thing that really, really changed a lot of people's mind was that night after the summit, we had a hip-hop showcase where a lot of the DJs that came in from across the country, we performed for them. And they actually got to hear and listen and see. I mean, the comments that we were getting were, wow, this is like an amazing show. It's not, you know, degrading women or talking about killing and all these things like that. There are some positive things in hip-hop. So once they attended the showcase, we had people up dancing. I mean, people were dancing, people were singing, people were clapping their hands, people were just having a great time, all because of hip-hop music. Hip-hop is a very, very versatile type of music form. Like you say, you know, one person, you might think that that person is a rapper or that that person is a DJ, but there's a lot of versatility in what they do.
And it's all locally produced.
It's all locally produced. Yesterday was one of the most amazing, amazing music shows that we had in a while here at KHOI, because we had a lot of the DJs on there, and we had Mike Crenshaw. You know, you look at Mike and you think this whole big thug type image, but Mike was talking about, you know, superheroes in his rap. You know, he was talking about, you know, you can be a superhero. You know, so he was inspiring the kids or, you know, whoever, in the fact that if you're going to do this, think of yourself in a positive light and be who you are. And by being that, you know, you can be a hero.
And Mike is from where?
Mike is from, he was born in Chicago, but he's in Arizona.
Okay.
He's in Arizona.
So, Ron, this has been a lot of work for you, I know, getting all these folks together. Can you talk a little bit about what this has meant to you, especially it's been a tough summer for you anyway?
Yes, yes. Getting a lot of these DJs together, to me, was a lot of hard work. Just getting them together and getting them on the same page, I thought was going to be really, really hard until we all got together. And once we got together, it turned into a family. I can say within the 3-day, 4-day period that the conference went on and through this hip-hop summit, we came here as strangers, but we're leaving as friends. And we're leaving as family, basically, because we're all just one big hip-hop family.
Well, Ron, you are such a vital member of the KHOI family and such an important person in getting this GRC conference going and all the hard work behind it. And now it's really great to see you're now recognized as an important part of a national movement.
Exactly. I'm kind of odd. Like I say, we're still recovering from this weekend because, like I say, this weekend was one of the most awesomest weekends that I've ever had. So I'm still kind of recovering from that. But at the same time, it's refreshing and it's refilling. It makes me feel good to know that I was a part of the first, and I guess they say annual, hip-hop summit that's going to be taking place at future GRCs. So, and our station manager, Ursula Rutenberg, and a couple of people were telling me, Ron, you have set the standard for GRCs, you know, grassroots radio conferences. In fact, that when they look at the GRCs and the events that have happened at them throughout the years, this hip-hop summit will always be remembered as one of the most important events that has ever happened at a grassroots radio conference. So, yes, I am very proud that we, KHOI, got this and we made it happen.
Well, congratulations on a job very, very well done.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That was Ron Latson of KHOI Community Radio and the convener of the first annual hip-hop summit at the Grassroots Radio Conference 2014. And Ron mentioned the Saturday night music show, and Ursula did as well. And Rick, our engineer, has captured that show, and we plan to post it on our homepage along with a story about the hip-hop summit so that others can enjoy it as well. And it's fascinating to me how important these media that you might describe as the oral tradition are so important to community radio. Community radio, which has part of its mission representing the voices that are underrepresented or suppressed.
And we were very proud at our opening ceremony to start the conference with a remarkable storyteller, Jonathan Buffalo. He's the historian of the Meskwaki people out at the Meskwaki settlement near Tama. And he welcomed people to the event as really the true host of this place, this bioregion, and told a few stories. Their history as woodland people on this continent goes way back.
Yes, there were a few mastodons and mammoths in those stories he told.
Yeah, and, you know, that I thought that was a really beautiful and important thing. When he opened up, he said, you know, when the mastodons were walking on the earth, we were here too as a people. And it's just really unusual for another human being to express that much sense of continuity. That's an incredibly beautiful and important thing for us as humans to hear. And I also, you know, want to say one more thing. It's such a rare moment where a bunch of white people can sit in a room and have a Native American basically stand up in front of them and say, you know, this is our history and you know what? It's okay. It, you know, things were okay. And that's kind of what he did. He talked about how in Iowa, things really worked out with the pioneers. Between them and the Indians. That's such a rare moment when white people can do that.
That's right. And there was another connection. You know, I talked earlier about how everyone's GRC was a little different. My GRC, as it turned out, included a field trip to the Meskwaki settlement. One of our guests, Jerome Edge, from the First Nation people of the Northwest, wanted to interview a community elder to take that interview back to the Seattle area for his show. And so we went to the house of Ray Young Bear, an author and poet of the Meskwaki people. When we arrived, interestingly enough, Ray was saying, oh, I was just getting my drum out and gathering my children to practice a song for you. And so they did that. They sang a song around the drum. They played a couple songs, and then Jerome interviewed Ray. So here's an excerpt of that interview.
OCM, CIM, this is Jerome Edge of the GRC Conference, reporting live from the land of the Meskwaki people. And I've got a very distinguished gentleman here who I would like to introduce himself, tell us a little bit about himself, and where we are here today.
My name is Ray Young Bear. I'm a Meskwaki tribal member. I live on Kamiskwaki Settlement, lifelong member and resident in Tama County, state of Iowa. My wife Stella and I founded the group in 1984. Previously, we employed roughly 100 Meskwaki singers and dancers over the years until it evolved to the point where we are now basically a family group. However, we do extend to friends and relatives on my wife's side and my side, and so poetry extends to traditional Meskwaki language, where my family recites in song and harmony the songs of our people. In that sense, we are cultural representatives. I'm also involved with, to an extent, I would say, the language, because I am one of the few, well, at that time, a long time ago, it was said to me by a very noted anthropologist that he could count on his hand the number of Native American writers and poets who could speak and write in their language, and I happened to be one of them. So from the five at that time, roughly 30 years ago. And so those things I attempt to impart to my kids as well, hoping that they can learn the Meskwaki language from conversations that my wife and I engage in every day. It's gotten to the point now, as they have gotten older, that they are now curious as to what we are talking about, because, you know, we will deliberately converse in Meskwaki until one of them will inquire, "What was that? I missed that. Could you, you know, clarify?" Which is where we want to take this. You know, if they want to learn, it is up to them to seek and pull up the reinforcement that is being taught at the Meskwaki Settlement School. The Meskwaki Settlement School is a bilingual, bicultural school that teaches Meskwaki language, culture, religion, history, and so forth. And our role at home is to reinforce that stuff, or vice versa. And so it's very interesting, I believe, to be in their shoes, to try and ascertain what is important and how to get from the society, get from their parents, get from the school, what they need to survive in today's society.
Now, kind of in the realm of what you were just talking about, back home in my community in Washington State, I'm a young person who I find it important to sit down with our elders, to listen, to learn our history, learn our songs, our language. As a parent, and as a very traditional parent, what makes it important to you to instill these teachings and these songs and everything culturally in between that you do with your kids as a parent? Why do you feel it's important that they learn this information?
It's a twofold process. My wife, who is currently in the other room working on her beadwork, both of us, in a sense, have roles. My wife, if I may make a comment upon her, is very influential with regard to the Meskwaki religion. She single-handedly has taken our children from the time they were babies, infants, up to now, to the Meskwaki longhouse, versus my end. My end is primarily academic, as well as language, Meskwaki language, and so forth. And so it's a trade-off between us. She fulfills the role that was taught to her as a young girl by her parents and grandparents and so forth. And then my end, oftentimes when they come back from the Meskwaki longhouse, is to basically dissect for them verbally what they have gone through. And it's a day-long process in terms of the songs that they listen to, in terms of the dances that are being imparted, in terms of understanding. Because in my youth, it was hard for me to comprehend just exactly what was being taught within the longhouse structure. But I realized that it would be good for my own children if I sat there just to reinforce the whole process, which isn't to say that we are totally immersed in culture, language, and so forth. one of the things that I'm doing on my academic or literary side is to share with them songs that I grew up with, listening to Bob Dylan, to the Beatles, the Doors, because when you take the songs apart, when you read the lyrics, that's poetry, and I write poetry, and to instill in it the musical element. The musical element is reflective of Meskwaki songs. Songs are songs. In 1985, my Woodland Song and Dance group and my wife's group, we co-founded a group. We took an international folk dance tour of the Netherlands, where we met various countries who were engaged within their own efforts to retain their songs and dances, Turkey, Poland, Yugoslavia at that time. But to me, those things were very important. But along the way, somewhere I was carrying my tippy quarter, such as you, and listened to, I believe it was BBC radio, and I heard a band called Prefab Sprout, the singer-composer, Paddy McAloon, eventually gave me permission to use some of his lyrics in my novel. And so to this day, once or twice a week, we get on YouTube and I put on BBC Radio Live. It's called a Live Lounge, where various musical artists from Great Britain within their area or America visit the lounge and they sing live. And those things I impart to my children, large because of lyrics, large because these people are vocalists, and we are vocalists as well. And so that is a way of learning how you control your voice. There's intonation. There's also a meter that you have to be aware of. And as you notice, my children, my grown-up children singing recently, they're very good learners. And eventually, at some point, they'll carry on with the drum. Not only that, they'll listen to BBC Live Lounge.
You know, you remind me a lot of my grandmother. When I started my hip-hop show and I was doing hip-hop music, it kind of puzzled me because my grandma, she said to me, she said, "You know, son," she goes, "I'm very proud of you that you do hip-hop. I think that's great." When, you know, most people are like, "Hip-hop, oh, man," like, "oh, you know." She said that to me, and I said, "You are?" I said, "Well, how come?" And she said, "Well, son," she said, "we come from a storytelling people, and you're just carrying on your story. You're just utilizing these new methods and ways in this new age to tell your story like our people have told for time and time again, and in new ways, in new methods." And that really reminded me of that. And I gotta say, this is a really great place. Like, you know, everywhere I've been in Iowa, you know, I think I felt most at home, mm-hmm. you know, here being from a tribal community myself. Mm-hmm. Well, as my people in the Northwest say, we'll see them. You know, we thank you for welcoming us into your home this afternoon. And thank you for dropping this knowledge and information with us. So this has been Jerome Edge for the GRC Conference, reporting live from the Meskwaki Settlement.
And you're listening to Local Talk. This is an example of the kind of journalism that people at the conference are doing. And as we were wrapping up this very important event in the life of our community radio family, the GRC Conference, I had to do a little journalism myself because excitement was building among our neighboring clan for a very important beginning.
Ames Public Library.
Yes. So I managed to catch the library director, Lynn Carey, just about an hour before an interesting and important ritual took place.
We are winding down at our temporary location that has served us so well for the last 18 months plus, and closing up. We will be reopening at our brand new, wonderful facility in 4 weeks. So what we're doing right now is gathering together for a symbolic book brigade, a ceremonial event to celebrate everything that's been happening over the last few years, getting ready to move into the new building.
And I understand the books were selected by staff. The symbolic books that will be part of this book brigade were selected by staff. Is Winnie the Pooh among them?
I was not one who selected. Otherwise, it would be. We're passing 14 books in this ceremony, and they were selected by each of the 14 selectors, people who do this day in and day out and build the collections that we have that are so important for the community. And frankly, I don't know what they all are because I want to be surprised just like everybody else.
So, Lynn, what does this mean to you personally as interim director of the library and then director of the library as the library went through this transition process?
I guess I probably have a look of shock on my face because that's kind of what I'm feeling right now. I can't believe this day is actually here. And I keep having that experience over and over as we reach milestones. This is a huge milestone, though, closing and getting ready to open in 4 short weeks that will go by very, very fast, I'm sure. It's the culmination of years and years of planning and an incredible amount of effort for many, many people. And I'm excited. I'm, I guess, bursting is the best word with excitement. I'm ready.
And then you face 4 very long weeks, long hours, but the light is at the end of the tunnel and some normalcy may resume.
That's what we're hoping for. We know that once we get in, we'll continue tweaking things. There will be things that won't be quite done. There will be things that we think of later that, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be great to do this now that we're in the space and know how we're using it. So there will be a few more months of tweaking and continuous improvement. That's one of our basic values. But yes, the light is at the end of the tunnel, and we are very, very excited about this.
The new library is built up around a concept, or at least the service area is built around the concept of being untethered. Is that correct?
We have used as our guiding principles for all of our planning the acronym FUN. It stands for flexible, untethered, and nimble. And we've applied that to all of our planning, from furniture to staffing to how we approach our own lives, too. We know that we need to remain flexible in the face of change. We need to be untethered as people from the way we've always done stuff in the past. Our furniture needs to be untethered so that if we find that it's not working in the location we planned, we can move it somewhere else. Nimble, we need to be able to adapt and change as we start using the new building and as we're planning. Everything has to fit together, and so we can't plan in a vacuum, so being nimble is really important. So we've used this acronym throughout the whole planning process and to apply to ourselves for how we're approaching all of these major changes.
In other words, you're trying to have fun.
We're thinking that if we are fun, then things will be fun and we will have fun.
Well, good luck with that. It sounds like a very fun event today.
It's the excitement here is palpable, and the shelves are literally emptying. As we look around here, we can see that there are very few DVDs left on the shelf. The new bookshelves are just completely cleaned out. People are stocking up because they love their library materials, and they're stocking up to get through the next few weeks. The staff is winding down because we'll be closing the doors here at 5 o'clock. Then we start moving tomorrow morning.
Well, thanks for taking some time out to speak with me, Lynn.
Sure. It's always a pleasure. I love KHOI. It's great that we're going to be back in our neighborhood and make Douglas Avenue the go-to place in this community.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We spent the hour talking about the Grassroots Radio Conference. David Barsamian, Ron Latson, Ray Young-Bear, interviewed by Jerome Edge of Skagit Valley Community Radio, and Story County's own Lynn Carey.
Check our website later in the day for a podcast of the show and links to the various guests. Our website is khoifm.org. It's khoifm.org. GRC 2014.net is the conference website.
We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Ursula Rudenberg. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Thanks to Pat Schlarberm for production assistance, Richard Morrison for engineering the show.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, and if you'd like to join our team here at KHOI at 410 Douglas Avenue, come by. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org, or call us at 292-2878.
As always, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.